I want you to open up your Bibles to 1 Peter, and we're going to continue our series through this book. This is, if you weren't here last week, this is an awesome book of the Bible, but it's not one that's typically most people's favorite book. And the reason that that is, there may be a few who are like, well, it is mine, and I don't mean any offense, but that's just kind of the fact, because it's a tough book. It's a book that deals with suffering, but the message that Peter is giving to his people that he's writing to during the suffering is a message that says, hang in there, keep fighting, suffering's coming your way. That's not, you know, we like the ones that are saying, hey, it's almost over. He's saying it's just getting going. And his people are tired, and they're hurting, and they're miserable. And he's saying, we're not finished yet. And as I talked to you about last week, this is the persecution that they're about to face where Peter's life is taken. And so this is a major persecution they're going to face. And the writer of this book doesn't make it through to see the end result. And so it's a very passionate book about a man who's all too familiar with suffering, writing to a church that's new and is experiencing suffering. And he's saying, hang in there. It's going to get worse before it gets better. But there's hope in the end. And he's trying to shift their perspective in the midst of their suffering. And I think that's kind of what we need oftentimes, right? Like, in the midst of suffering, oftentimes I need to be reminded, even though I've been in ministry and have grown up in a minister's household, that doesn't make the difference. I still need to be reminded when I'm suffering. Oftentimes I need to hear, Nathan, shift your focus. Realize it's better things are happening, better things are to come. I love this phrase. It's a phrase that we've said in our family for a long time. The best is yet to come. Look to your neighbor and say, the best is yet to come. That's something, it's just such an important phrase, and you never know what the person next to you is going through. And that may be the thing that the person sitting next to you needed to hear today. And if so, this whole message is for you. Listen, this is one of the books of the Bible that I hope it's going to mean a lot to you. Take notes, store this away, because anytime we talk about suffering and we talk about pain, it's a roller coaster ride. You may not be facing what the difficulty and the pain today, but there's another day coming. And pain is always around our corner, but the good news is Jesus is always with us, and that gives us hope. And so let's look at what Peter is addressing here in his first chapter to his people. I wish we could just, like a class, go verse by verse, but I can't spend 8 months in the book of First. I could spend 8 months in the book of First Peter, but I'm not going to. Trying to still stay less class material and more sermon based, but there's just so much good stuff in here. I hope you'll go home and that you'll read through this book on your own time and that you'll dig in deeper than what we're able to get here. But man, there's a lot of good stuff. And it starts for us in verse 6 this morning. Actually, we'll start in verse 3, get a little context working to verse 6. So read with me. It says, praise be to God, the Father of our Lord Jesus Christ. In His great mercy, He has given us new birth into a living hope through the resurrection of Jesus Christ from the dead and into an inheritance that can never perish, spoil, or fade, kept in you for heaven, who through faith are shielded by God's power. That's huge for them. You're not shielded by your own strength. You're shielded by the strength of God. I love that. It literally, Peter is giving a picture of the strength of God, and he's saying it's a shield for you. God is your shield. Which, by the way, shield and power and strength, those are military type words, right? It's showing what's coming for them. This is war you're entering. This is a fight you're going to be in for. And this is a theme throughout all the New Testament, but especially his letter. You think about Paul, he always says, we're running this race, we're fighting the fight. This language has carried to Peter as well. And he says, through faith, we're shielded by God's power until the coming of the salvation that is ready to be revealed in the last time. Now to our verse 6. In this you greatly rejoice, though now for a little while you may have had to suffer all kinds of trials. I got 2 points this morning, and my first point is that pain is temporary. Pain doesn't last forever. Now, that's not the message that I often want to hear as soon as something tragic happens to me. You know, it doesn't really help a lot when someone comes up to you and maybe you've just lost someone close to you. Maybe it's a death in the family. Maybe it's that phone call from the doctor that diagnoses a sickness. Maybe it's that phone call from a kid that you never wanted to get. Whatever it is, we've all had those moments where we go through something tough, and oftentimes people will come up and try to help, and they'll say things like, "Hey, don't worry. This will end. This will pass." It's very true, and it's a very needed statement, and it is the statement that Peter is giving here. It's not often the first statement that you need to say to someone who's struggling, but it is something that they do need to understand at some point. Pain is temporary. And you may not believe that because some of you have been going through some pain for quite some time now, and you're saying, "This has been my life, Nathan, not just for the past day or week or a month. This has been my life for the past few years, and I don't see this changing anytime soon." But the truth that Peter is telling his people is that pain is temporary. I thought about this. I don't know if you knew this about me. I know with my great physique and strength, maybe you could have assumed that I used to do CrossFit for about, 7 months of my life. Maybe that's about how long it was. It wasn't a very long time, but it was a time I'll never forget. For those of you who don't know what CrossFit is, it's just like this really tough workout that everybody did for a while, and some of my friends roped me into doing it. "We're doing it. Come on with us. It's not going to be bad. Oh, it's easy. The first week's just what's tough." Don't let them fool you. Every day is miserable, and it doesn't get any better. And so, but anyway, I started doing these workouts, and the workouts were called WODs. And so every day you would come in, and they would have a WOD. Now, what was really interesting is before you got to your WOD, you would have a warm-up. Well, CrossFit people are so extreme, they don't just, you know, warm up with a little bar with no weights. Like, you're warming up squatting 200 pounds, you know? Your warm-ups is throwing weight around like you're the Hulk. And by the time the warm-up's done, I'm already spent. And then they say, "All right, y'all ready to start the WOD?" And I'm going, "I'm ready to go home," you know? And so every day, and the workouts that they did were just extreme, and it was tough. It was the hardest thing I've ever been a part of. That 7 months, I don't think there was a day that went by where I wasn't sore and I wasn't tired. But I will tell you this, you see results. And even me, I started to see changes in my body, in my I used to get tired a lot, and I was more awake. I was more aware. I was feeling better outside of that moment. But let me tell you, that hour, that's all it took. That hour was one of the toughest experiences I've ever been through. And the whole time it's going on, if I focused on how miserable I was going to quit. I was going to quit because I was miserable. And it would be about 20 minutes in and you're thinking, "Oh, I'm going to die, you know. I can't do one more rep." But what you would focus on, you couldn't focus on the moment. You had to, and this was the advice they were giving. Don't focus on the rep that you're on. Focus on the end result. Focus on what you're working for. Focus on the goal that you're heading towards. And that's what I would have to do in order to make it through the intense workout of the moment, is I would have to focus on, I'm doing this because I want to be healthy. I'm doing this because I had some high blood pressure stuff going on. I'm doing this because my family has some history of heart stuff going on, and I want to be healthy, and I want to be strong, and I want to take care of myself in the best way that I can. That's why I'm doing it. I'm doing this because I want to see my kids grow old, and I don't want to miss out on life because I'm not healthy enough, and all these different things. So I'm going to do this. And I would have to keep Avery, how sweet and romantic does this sound? You know, in the hardest moments, Avery, I'm doing a push-up, and I'm like, you know, and I'm like picturing you, and I'm like, "I'm doing it for her." You know, I'll tell you, look, I'm going to get vulnerable with you. I'm the guy that I'm running on the treadmill, you know, and I'm hitting a couple of miles, and I'm still trying to go, and I got, you know, half a mile left. So I'm picturing Avery, you know, and she's in a fire somewhere, or she's in a disaster somewhere, or she's, and she needs me to get there, you know, and so I'm going to keep going. And that's the kind of thing I would do. I know it's silly, but that's what I do when I work out, because it's miserable if you focus on the moment, but you're able to endure if you find strength to do so. Have you ever heard of these stories of people who find incredible amounts of strength in a moment for their child? You ever heard stuff like that? Like these things that are just crazy where the human body shouldn't be able to do this, where a woman who's weighs 120 pounds soaking wet is able to lift up an entire car because her kids were trapped under it. As stuff like that where they're able to lift it up and to take care of their kids and to save their lives. You can research this stuff. It's the adrenaline of the moment because they're working towards something that inspires them and taps their body to find strength and abilities that they didn't know that they had otherwise. And so let me show you something that I was studying about with Peter as I'm thinking on this whole train of thought. I went through last night, and I'm looking through words repeated in 1 Peter. And so I started to notice this theme, because what's the theme of the book? What would you think? It's suffering, right? And that's where I am too. I believe that's the theme of the book. That's what's going on with these people. They're facing suffering. But it was really interesting when I started counting words that Peter repeats. Oftentimes when you're studying New Testament letters, focus on, if you're studying a chapter, write down how many times the writer repeats a word. And that'll help you figure out what his message is. And that's what I did last night. And it was really interesting. I found that suffering in the first chapter in my Bible was mentioned twice. Two times. Hope was mentioned three. Faith was mentioned four. Salvation was mentioned five. And the really interesting part to me was that heaven, or you'll see this phrase, revealed to you in the last times, glory to come. All of that is focusing on heaven, on the last times, on the end things to come. Suffering's mentioned twice. Heaven and revealed and all that is mentioned 11 times in the first chapter. Isn't that interesting? It blew my mind. And what I began to realize is Peter, he's addressing the suffering they're facing. But the way that he's addressing the suffering is saying, by shift your focus. He only mentioned suffering twice. But their minds, don't you know, as they're reading and they're listening, as this is, because it would be read out loud, this circular letter would be passed around, it would be read out loud to these churches. And so as it's read out loud, they would hear things like, you're shielded by God's power until the coming salvation that is ready to be revealed. There it is again, in the last time. In this you greatly rejoice, though now for a little while you may have to suffer grief of all kinds of trials. They probably hear that, and if they're like me, my brain shuts off right there. You know, because that's what I'm going to hear, is the suffering. And I think Peter understood that. So he said, I'm going to say it again and again and again. Heaven is coming. Grace is coming. Jesus is going to be revealed in the last times. It's going to be worth it. Five times he shared about their salvation. He said, salvation is coming in the last times. Three times hope, four times faith. Have faith. You have hope in the midst of this suffering because you have salvation in the last times. What you're facing in the moment pales in comparison to what is going to be revealed at the end if you keep the faith and you have hope. That's the message of 1 Peter in this chapter. And so listen, what's crucial for us is that every time we find ourselves saying that we can't do something. You ever been there before? I was there in CrossFit in that workout. I'm not just talking about in a spiritual way. I'm talking about in any way. You face something and you say, I can't do this. There's no way for me to push through. I've got to stop. Somebody else is going to have to take the slack. I can't do this anymore. And then when it does go to that spiritual level, you're crying out to God and you're saying, God, I can't take it another day. Take this away from me. And we've all felt that before. But what you do is when you find yourself saying that you can't do something, you need to reaffirm your goals. You need to reaffirm your dreams. You need to reaffirm the end results. And that's what Peter is doing for them. He's saying, I know you're suffering and I know it's hurting. And by the way, the pain's going to keep coming for a while. But you can hang in there because of what's coming. The end is worth it. The end result. So you've got to hold on to the dream when you say you can't do it. And so as you're in the present, you can't focus on the present. You've got to focus on the future. You've got to focus on what's to come. Because you're going to meet opposition in this life. I'm sorry to tell you. You're going to have difficulty. You're going to have trouble and challenges, and you're going to have long, dark moments, long, dark nights, sleepless nights in this life because of the things that are to come. And so when it doesn't make sense to other people, and sometimes it doesn't even make sense to you, you've got to keep hanging in there and find the strength to stand firm because the end result is worth it. Successful people in life, and I'm not just talking spiritually alone, I'm talking about any successful person. You meet those people, and you start to question how they got to where they are. And they'll tell you that whenever I didn't have this dream, when I, you know, you ask somebody who was broke, you say, how did you, and now they're rich, but they used to be broke. How did you end up earning that money and being successful? They'll tell you, because I had a picture of this and I acted like this before I ever had it. You see, I had the end result in the palm of my hand before it was ever a reality. I had taken hold of it and said, this is who I'm going to be. So when you're working out, you want to lose weight, you want to eat healthier, you want to be better. When you're in a spiritual struggle and you need the strength to hang in there, you've got to envision the end result and say, this is who I am. I'm going to make it through this, and I'm going to be better for it. And today it hurts, but tomorrow it's worth it. And so I'm going to fight today. I'm going to have faith today. I've said it before, and I'll say it again. The only time that we get to have faith is on this side of heaven. Because one day when we're in heaven with God, faith is no more. We're with Him. We're in His presence. You have faith in what you can't see, but when you're with Him and you see Him and you hear Him and you're talking with Him, faith is, this is the moment. This is it. Have faith today because it's worth it tomorrow. Don't focus on the present. Focus on the future. It's necessary for you to be patient today, to take a stand, to dig in. You're going to have to take some punches. You're going to have to be prepared for a fight because Satan's throwing this stuff at you, and those trials are going to come. This is Peter's lesson to them, but at the end of pain is success. At the end of misery is glory, and at the end of the battle is victory because of Jesus. Listen to me. Pain is temporary. It may last an hour, a day, a year, or several years, but if I quit, that lasts a lifetime. Don't quit. Don't give up. Pain is temporary. That's what Peter wants them to understand. And then he wants them to understand something else about pain and their suffering in this first chapter. And it's that pain is transformative. Pain is transformative. Look back to verse 6. We'll start there again. In this you greatly rejoice, Peter says, though now for a little while you have had to suffer all kinds of grief of all kinds of trials. These have come. What are the these that have come? Say it to me. The trials that you're facing. He's about to tell you why they're here. These have come so that your faith, which is of greater worth than gold, which perishes even though it's refined by fire, may be proved genuine and may result in praise and glory and honor when Jesus Christ is revealed. God, why? Why? Because I'm transforming you. You've heard me say it before. I can't help but think about this in moments like this. Jesus didn't die to forgive you. He died to change you. And yes, forgiveness is a major part of that change, and I'm thankful that we get forgiveness of sins, aren't you? But that's not the only reason He died. That's not what the gospel tells me. He died to change you. He died to take you from who you are today and make you into who He wants you to be tomorrow. He died to take your faith that's this size and increase it exponentially. He died to take you in a state where you're broken and defeated and you're miserable and you're hurting, and to make you into someone who is tough in the Lord, someone who is strong in the faith. He's died not just to forgive you, but to change you. And sometimes I think we shortchange the gospel a little bit because we focus on the forgiveness aspect, which we rightly should, but we neglect the changing aspect because change is hard. Change hurts. Change is tough because that means that I'm going to have to get out of my comfort zone and say, God, do what you want. We sing songs about it all the time, but it's a whole different thing to live it out than to sing it out. And so we sing, you know, you're the potter and I'm the clay. Mold me and make me after your will. We say it, we sing it, we pray it, but do you live it? Or are you the person that says, I'm a Christian, I love you, Jesus, just don't mess with me. You know, I sit in the same pew every Sunday. I've got it. How many of you wish that you had your pew with your name on the back? Some of you have probably carved it into the back because that's my seat on a Sunday morning, right? You've got your pillow and your blanket and your back massager all in your place. I'm sorry if I love my seat too, so I can say this, right? But that's how we live. And I'm not, my goal is not to say, well, move around in your seats while you're here. That's not the goal. What my goal is to say is allow God to change you, to shape you, to mold you, and to push you outside of your comfort zone. Allow Him to take you to the scary place because it's in the trials that you're transformed. I think about a caterpillar, you know? And so you got this caterpillar, and all day long this thing's crawling around in the dirt. That's what it does for life. You got just this little tiny thing, it crawls around in the dirt. It's in the muck of life, in the grossness of life. But then one day it hits that cocoon, and in the midst of that silk cocoon, this caterpillar is transformed into a butterfly. And it's beautiful, and it's amazing. You ever been to like a butterfly farm before or something like that, you know? And they're landing all on you, and you get to hold them and see them and up close and personal like that. I mean, these creatures are beautiful. And to think that that thing used to crawl around in the dirt, and now it's transformed to fly to new heights, to see things it's never seen before, and to do things it's never been able to do before. And Peter is telling his people, because they need this message and so do we. He's telling them, I know you're crawling around in the dirt right now, and I know that you're in the cocoon of pain right now, but it's transforming you into something beautiful, and you're going to be able to do things and see things and be at places you never thought you would be. And you're going to find strength you didn't know you have. And you're going to find wings you didn't know existed. But they come through the cocoon of pain. Pain is transformative. Oh, that's a beautiful message, but it's a tough one. But Peter needs them to understand it as suffering is on the edge for them. And let me tell you something. Nobody understands this better than Peter. Right? No, nobody gets the fact that you're transformed through pain more than Peter. You think about Peter's life and you think about his ministry. I wish we had time to turn in the text and to see this, but I'll just kind of paraphrase it for you. I think I might have preached a lesson on this at one point. About Peter in the gospel and towards the end of Jesus' life, Peter goes and he denies him how many times? He denies him three times. And so Peter has this pain and this guilt and this shame. Don't you know it was there? I mean, Jesus is his best friend, you know? And he just watched his best friend die. And not too long ago, Peter was saying, I'm with you. I've got your back. I'm your man. No matter what happens, I'll die with you, Jesus. And then he had his opportunity. And in that moment, Peter was singing the song, Mold Me and Make Me. But he wasn't willing to hang on the cross for Mold Me and Make Me, right? There's a point where he said, I'm your man, but if it gets too uncomfortable, I'm out. And Peter said, mm-mm, not me. And I look at my life. Can I just put in a snippet instead of beating up on Peter too much and say, I've done the same thing? I've lived that same life where I say, I'm in Jesus for do or die. But then there's this thing that comes up and I know that Jesus is calling me there. And I'm like, nah, not that. But I'll go this far. But then somebody else is going to have to do that. And so Peter watches his friend die, not only watching him die, but has denied even knowing him and has cursed his name. And then Jesus rises from the grave and he comes back to him. And it's this beautiful moment where Peter and Jesus meet face to face again. The one who is dead is now living and my best friend is standing there. Now let me ask you, you got to get into the mind of Peter for a second. What's he thinking about? You know, it's a roller coaster because I want to celebrate. Yes, he's alive. But now I've got to face the reality of what I did 3 days ago. And then can't you see Peter wanting to say it, but he can't find the words, and maybe he's loosening up his tie too. And he says, Jesus, maybe stops himself. I'm sorry. And so Jesus starts the conversation. And he looks to Peter and he says, Peter, do you love me? You know I love you, God. You know I love you, Jesus. Then feed my sheep. Peter, do you love me? You know I love you. Then feed my sheep. Peter, do you love me? And I think at that third moment, it clicks for him. Why did Jesus ask him three times? One for each denial. Jesus is bringing Peter right to his very most painful place. You see, sometimes when we love people, I avoid conversations with them because I know that that's a sensitive area. Not Jesus. Jesus said, I'm going to bring you to that place of pain. We're going to deal with this. Do you love me? Do you love me? Do you love me? And Peter feels the overwhelming sense of pain and shame as he's brought back to that moment of denial. But Jesus is bringing him there not to poke fun at him or to mock him, but he's bringing him there to heal him and to change him. Do you understand? He's bringing him to his place of pain because he loves him, not because he hates him. But sometimes we don't get the message and we're like, God, why would you do this? And if God said, because I love you, it would be so true, but we wouldn't understand it anyway. I think sometimes God doesn't necessarily just come down and give you an answer because you wouldn't understand the answer anyway, and it would make you more angry. How many of you, when you were disciplined by your parents, they would come in, they were getting ready to swat you, and they got the belt off, you know? Did your parents ever pop the belt to scare you on the way in? I don't know if my parents were just brutal or what, but man, my dad could pop that belt, and it would scare the tar out of me. And he comes in, and then he would say, son, what? Are you kidding me? Ain't no way. Let me take the belt. I'll make it. No, you know, you think that as a kid. You don't say that unless you really want to beat him, right? But we think that, right? You don't love me. You're hitting me. And yet, even as a child, I get spanked, and as soon as I'm crying and I'm miserable, and who do I turn and give him the biggest hug that I can? The same man that just hit me. I'm just doing that because I'm sad. I'm just doing that because I need help. I'm doing that because... But he hit me. He hurt me. He put me through the pain. He loves you. And even as a child, you knew that he loved you. But somehow as an adult, as the children of God, we somehow get angry at God when we start to experience pain in this life and we say, I can't do it anymore. God, I'm done. I'm done. I'm done. How many people have left the church because God hurt me or he hurt my family? And where was God when I love you. And I think God's waiting with open arms for you to come running into him, and he's going to hug you and he's going to hold you and he's going to embrace you. But we miss it. And so Peter's brought back to that moment of pain because Jesus wants to heal him. I think about how many ever had a broken bone before? Raise your hand. I want to see. There's a lot. Yeah, you've experienced that. It hurts. It's painful. It's miserable. I broke my finger. And when I broke my finger, it looked like it was dislocated. They popped it back in place. It was a gruesome moment. It was nasty. I was like, this is not good. And so then I go to the doctor, and they sent me from the doctor to a hand specialist who's a surgeon that only works on hands. And I'm like, this is not good. And he takes an x-ray and comes back and he says, Nathan, do you see the break? And I'm like, yeah. I actually think it's kind of cool at the moment. I'm like, oh, that's awesome. You know, all right, how are we going to fix this? And he says, do you see all those little specks on the x-ray? I said, the dust there? He said, yeah, that's bone. He said, your knuckle is shattered. I'm thinking of it. And he said, I'm going to do the best I can to put this back together. And the hand specialist tells me, but this is the worst break I've ever seen. Great. Then he says, we're going to have to reset it. And you know what that, some of you get it, right? I'm like, oh, that's no problem. That's fine. No big deal. No, son, I'm going to have to break it again. What? Then he comes in and people are all around. They grab my hands, you know, and then they hold me down. And then he comes in and he kind of pulls and leans back. I'm like, oh, that wasn't too bad. And then he goes, pop. And I go, ah! And it was actually what I did is it hurt so bad. I open up my mouth, but no sound came out. I'm just, ah. You know, and I'm just in so much pain that I start to just sweat profusely, you know, and it's just this miserable moment. But I didn't get mad at him and just haul off and hit him. And I didn't say, what are you doing? I knew what he was doing. He's helping me. But man, it hurt. But why don't I get mad? Because I understand that this is for my good. I understand that it's not about today. It's about my future. I understand that when it's my finger. But why don't I understand that when it's my life? Why is it harder for me to take when my kids are suffering? Why is it harder for me to take when I find myself in that dark place and it's been this roller coaster and it's been this cycle and I can't get out and I'm wondering, is anything ever going to change? And now all of a sudden I don't trust God in the midst of that pain, but I'll trust my earthly dad when he spanks me or the doctor when he helps me, but I won't trust God when he sends me through painful times. Pain is temporary, and pain is transformative, and that, don't you see why this is such an important lesson for the people of 1 Peter who are about to experience the biggest persecution they've ever faced? And he's saying, look, I know you suffered for a little while, but there's a lot more coming. But 11 times in one chapter, he says, but there's something better on the other side. Fix your focus in the midst of your pain. Fix your focus in the midst of suffering. If you want to make it through, you can't look at the pain today. You've got to look at the glory tomorrow that's going to be revealed in Jesus Christ. That's the message that he's trying to send to these people. And I pray that they all got it. But if they're like me, some of them might even need to hear this message over and over again throughout this time. I imagine they probably made some extra copies and kept one per church or maybe one per person so that they could read it every day, because this is a message that we need. I'm going to close with this. You go back to our friendly caterpillar, you know. It was now this beautiful butterfly and he's flying around. What would you think if that caterpillar all of a sudden, not the caterpillar, it's a butterfly now. What if you saw that butterfly rolling around in the dirt? Messing himself up, getting all gross and nasty, and all of a sudden he's just disgusting. What are you doing? Yeah, that picture is just ridiculous, isn't it? Seeing this butterfly just roll around in the dirt, going back to the old life of the caterpillar. And then Peter, he says, 1 Peter chapter 1 and verse 14, this is also in our chapter 1, look at verse 14. He says, as obedient children, do not conform to the evil desires that you had when you lived in ignorance. In other words, Peter's saying, you've been transformed. You've gone through all this suffering. God has been working on you. That's also another major theme that we're going to see throughout this book, is that Peter is trying to help them mature. He goes into talking about spiritual milk here in the second chapter towards the beginning. He's trying to tell them, you're immature in your faith, and God is growing you, and you have done a good job, and you are doing great. Don't go back and live the way you used to live before all this pain and suffering and transformation in your life. You've done great. Stay transformed. How many ever, you go work out, and this is my life, you know. I told you I used to do CrossFit, and the shirt covers a lot of good stuff there, but I'm telling you, it doesn't look like it used to, because what have I done? I've gone back to living the same lifestyle I used to before, and now I find myself in the same place I was before it all started. And Peter's saying, don't do that spiritually. Don't do that with your suffering. God has brought you here for a purpose. Stay transformed. But so often, we hit that spiritual high moment, you know, that peak moment, and I'm on fire for Christ, and then we fall off later. And Peter says, no. Pain is temporary. Pain transforms you. So stay transformed. You don't want to go through the whole process again. Look, some of you, I don't know where you are. Some of you, you're like, that's me. I'm the one who stepped back, and I'm starting to live the way I used to live, and I was doing great, but now I'm not so far along as I want to be, and I have started to live this life of shame again, and regret again, and misery again, and sin again, and I need to recommit. And so we want to give you that opportunity to come up here and to pray with us and to get back your focus on God again. And maybe you're the one who's just struggling with suffering, and you're in the midst of the pain, and you understand pain, and you could have preached this lesson yourself because your life is an example of pain. Well, then we want you to know you're not alone. I wish we could say that the pain will go away tomorrow, but what we can say is pain is temporary and it is transformative and it will lead you to a place of great faith if you allow it to. Don't get mad at God. Pray to Him. Ask Him for help. Cry to Him. And don't do it alone. Let us pray with you as a family. If there's anything you need, won't you come while together we stand and sing.